First to Libya. Beset by a civil war that no one seems to care enough about to end. Who would have thought that 9 years after the death of the dictator Muammar Gaddafi in 2011, the killings would still be going on, and sadly, as my first guest will assert, with no resolution in sight. The conflict isn't merely about two sides battling over power. It's become a proxy war for international gains, staged against very old rivalries. Soldiers, mercenaries, and arms are all on the ground, and any attempts at ceasefires seem futile. Too much to lose, it would appear, for the major players. Last week, mass graves were discovered in Tahuna, a town southeast of Libya's capital Tripoli, and women and children were included in the bodies found. To try to understand what is happening there, who are the major players, and why peace is so elusive, I'm joined by Jalel Hashawi from the Klingendael Netherlands Institute of International Relations. Thank you for speaking to Saturday Extra.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Last year, you published an article in Foreign Policy, Jalel, saying that the Libyan civil war is actually about to get worse, which is devastating because you say none of the parties involved are serious about reaching a political settlement. So could we unpick that, please? Remind us, who are the major foreign countries involved and who do they support?
Yeah, I had written that article in mid-March. And the following weeks, unfortunately, showed that I was correct to talk about an escalation that seemed inevitable. And people, even at the time I wrote it, seemed to underestimate the resolve of Turkey. And Turkey is the big event for the last 6 months. And until a defeat that became visible in the greater Tripoli area, where Marshal Haftar's army got physically crushed around the capital. Until that moment, there was a tendency, even on the part of a lot of my colleagues, to underestimate the efficacy of the Turkish intervention. Other than Turkey, what we've had is basically the same usual suspects. The number of states interfering in Libya has not really risen over the last several years. If you could have asked me the question in late 2014, I would have mentioned Egypt. The most obstinate is not Egypt, it's the UAE, the United Arab Emirates, which is a Gulf state that has this peculiar characteristic, is that people tend to forget its name. People tend to resist the idea that it could be important, that it could exert an impactful action on a remote country. There's a lot of resistance. So the UAE, Egypt, and you have France. France is very close to these two countries. Saudi Arabia, by the same token. And of course, you have a Western tendency to interfere on the part of Italy, the UK, and of course the United States of America. Very, very often, and you know, throughout the whole period, that's started in February 2011, the beginning of the uprisings against Muammar Gaddafi, you've had Qatar. And Qatar is not as aggressive as it used to be, but now it's still associated with Turkey, and Turkey is the big forceful actor these days. So you know, to make it sound simple, we could still look at it as a big face-off between the UAE and Turkey. It's not a face-off between Turkey and Russia, but Russia plays a very peculiar, unusual, unorthodox role, which in itself is very interesting because it's novel. It's very innovative.
Meaning what? What do you mean?
Well, Russia has been looking at this theater. You know, Russia has a very small GDP, barely greater than Spain. It's not a rich country. Its defense budget is 12 times smaller than the United States. So it's, you can think of an actor that is geopolitically very savvy, great expertise, but not in the business of giving money to anybody. And he noticed that the Libyan theater had one feature, is that the foreign states facing off against each other in that theater were all U.S. allies. And so it basically became the epitome of Western function. And one particular actor seemed both tenacious, talented when it comes to perception, and very goofy when it comes to military affairs, and that's the UAE. And another characteristic of the UAE is that all Western capitals are deeply afraid of saying anything that could anger the UAE.
Because of their oil?
Because of their oil, because of their propensity to spend a lot of money, of being aggressive militarily. And it's directly connected to this idea that the United States is basically exiting the time zone of both Europe and Africa. But the bottom line is that Russia looked at this. The UAE has been trying to seduce Russia, has been inviting it to play a role in Libya, similar to what it has done in Syria. And Russia notices some other thing is that the UAE is easy with the money. Money is not an object. So this means that Russia could not influence the UAE because, as I said, the UAE cannot be influenced by anybody. It doesn't listen to anyone. It's protected by this diplomatic omerta. Nobody criticizes the UAE. So what Russia started doing was using an entity that it has used before in Ukraine and in Syria. It's not really a paramilitary business. It's a weird form of new mercenary concern. It's called Wagner, and it's obviously connected to the Kremlin, but it's not the Kremlin. And if you show up and ask Wagner to do stuff for you and show that you're absolutely serious when it comes to paying your bills, then it's going to look at it. And if it's compatible with the agenda of the Kremlin, it's going to do it for you, even if it's completely illegal, even if it involves war crimes. So this dynamic is really peculiar and really remarkable.
Well, now, I could keep listening to you, but it's such a cynical and extraordinary story you're telling. But it was reported this week, Jalil, despite all this, that Sergei Lavrov, the very canny, I think, Russian foreign minister, seems to have been doing some interesting diplomacy, if that's what it's called, this week. He said he would welcome any efforts by Washington to influence Turkey in getting a truce in Libya. So does it suggest that they're wearying already of their sort of involvement in Libya? And there was this sudden exit of these 2,000 Wagner, quotes, troops, who are very battle-hardened, tough, you know, Russian fighters, I gather, suddenly left Tripoli. So what's going on?
It's not a defeat. It's not a Russian defeat. And you're right to speak about Lavrov because he represents the Russian state. And the Russian state also plays a role in Libya, and it has a very specific agenda. What's extraordinary here is that you will never be able to get out of Lavrov the admission that Russia plays a military role in Libya. Why? Because in his perception, it's just this separate business that happens to be accepting to offer services to whoever pays. And of course, that entity called Wagner, as I said, never does anything that contradicts the agenda of the Kremlin. What I'm saying is that every Russian official complies with the principle of plausible deniability. Mm. So Wagner is for them a tool, and you're not supposed to know what they're doing with that tool. And as they get closer to a situation that they like, from time to time, the Russian state goes out and shows its involvement as an official foreign state. With
so they think they've got to be in it. They've got to appear to be in it.
Yeah, and most of the time, I mean, what they say is quite truthful. It's just that they will never admit to the existence of that completely clandestine and illegal action that is, as I said, funded by any other people anyway.
Okay, can I cut it? So are we dealing, just to go back, if you've got the UAE facing off against Turkey as the two key ones, is that a classic and rather, you know, long-standing contest between the Arabs of the Muslim world and the Turks of the Muslim world? That's gone back for centuries. Is that what we're watching here?
Well, I would tend to push back on that because Qatar is on the side of Turkey and they're Arabs and they're even from the same little area in the Arabian Peninsula historically. So it's not ethnic and it's not really religious per se. Both are Arab Sunnis, you know, Qatar and the UAE. I use Qatar because it's a good proxy of how a lot of the Arab factions locally and regionally think and operate. And Turkey, of course, has its own interest in supporting these people, and there is ideological compatibility between the two. But it's not a clash of civilization at all. It's about power. It's about realpolitik. It's about control of geostrategic assets. And of course, it's about also how they view governance. You know, some governance styles fit the philosophy of Turkey or Qatar and are still seen as existential threats by Gulf states that rely on a much more vertical form of tyranny, like Saudi Arabia or the UAE, obviously, who are greatly responsible for the genesis of the current Egyptian model. Right. So all those states are deeply vertical.
But do they want to get in there? If they win, I wonder what it means. So they want to sort of effectively occupy Libya, this extraordinary... No. What do they want?
Well, actually, Turkey is winning in Western Libya because it is willing to occupy. It's resorting to a 19th century form of protectorate, and it's doing it in the middle of the 21st century, and everybody is like staring at it, not knowing what's going on, because the other states so far, and that has been effectively their mistake, is that they thought they could control the conflict and influence the theater without sending boots on the ground and without getting their hands dirty. What really matters from the point of view of Riyadh or Abu Dhabi or Cairo is control of the ideology. Of course, there's an economic aspect to it, which matters a lot. But in their view, the priority is preventing certain forms of ideologies from even existing in other capitals and encouraging others that fit their own preferences. Okay. So they have the disillusion that they can actually win the conflict without sending air defense systems and actual advisors on the ground and without even having a military doctrine.
Look, we're going to leave it there. We haven't even got to the Europeans worrying about it being a key transit point for migrants going to Europe. But I'm sure will alert people to watch this story with some interest. Jalil Hashawi, thank you so much for your time and wending your way through that little thicket.
Thank you.
Jalil Hashawi from the Conflict Research Unit at the Klingendael Netherlands Institute of International Relations.